There once was a show called The Outcast, which was worse than your average podcast. The host oft would offend with his imaginary friend and make his few listeners switch it off fast.
Ha, 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 ha. I know everybody loves chalupas. Ha, 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 ha. If you want chalupas, I'm the one to show you how. I love chalupas, I'll show you how. Hey guys, this is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. And this is the third episode in a week I am recording for one of my carnival stories set in Praisedon Pickle Days Carnival in 1992. I didn't intend to do all three, but they were all written as companion pieces to each other, I guess. Well, I'll get to it after the story. But if you didn't like the first two, then maybe you should skip this show altogether. But this was the one that I was most nervous about. It's called Try Your Luck, and it was the very first story that I wrote at the Praisedon Pickle Days Carnival. And it was just me trying to write a fun, creepy carnival story. And it's really a throwback kind of tale. I feel like Ray Bradbury would have been like, yeah, I see what you were going for there. It seems like an old-fashioned story. I think it does mention 92, but it's not as fraught with song references as Round and Round is. But yeah, these episodes were meant to be put out quickly and easily. In the back of my mind, I figured I'd do them one in June, one in July, and one in August, just because I like you that much. And this one is Try Your Luck. I will meet you on the other side. It's not a long story. Hope you dig it.
Try Your Luck by Rish Outfield. Oh, twisted, under sideways down. I know you're getting twisted, and you can't come down. The cars. The summer of 1992 had ended, and the carnival was back in town. It was a tradition for the little town of Praisedon. The last week of August, the empty lot next to the town park became a carnival for 4 days. And it was a tradition for me to go year after year, since I was a little kid and my grandma would take me. The carnival was small, no big rides, no wild animals, except for horses and the occasional llama. No fun house, no fire eaters, just some kiddie rides, a few grown-up ones, the kind we used to call puke rides, a few scattered booths, lots of people selling junk food and junk souvenirs. It was the kind of carnival that fit in Praisedon. This year was no different. The sounds and sights and smells were all the same. A lot of the faces were probably the same, too. I didn't notice, because I wasn't alone this year. I had a new, pretty, right-out-of-the-box girlfriend, Carol, at my side. She was funny and sweet. We'd been going out on and off all summer, and she seemed to honestly like me. And she was good company. She even took a spin on the zipper with me, my favorite ride at the carnival, one I always hit every year. Things were winding down on this Saturday night, and most of the little kids had gone home. We had stuffed ourselves on 2 bags of popcorn, cherry slush puppies, and 1.5 cotton candies. We had bonked heads getting off the 7 deadly spins, been revolted by twin children vomiting on their mother, laughed till our stomachs ached, and held hands the rest of the time. This was absolutely great. "Feeling lucky," the barker said as we passed his booth, as if he had been reading my mind. I turned to the barker and looked his game over. The far wall was lined with balloons, evenly spaced from each other. A tray of brightly colored throwing darts sat in front of the man. "Well, are you punk?" he asked. "As a matter of fact, I am," I said. And it occurred to me that I don't think I had ever used the phrase "as a matter of fact." It seemed to be a saying whose time had passed, not unlike carnival try-your-luck games. The barker was a short man, probably 50, with a big round belly. He had a dark complexion, and underneath his bushy eyebrows were bright green eyes, like the colored contacts I had seen girls wear. There was a circular bald area coming up from his forehead, and though his short mustache and beard were gray, his curly hair was jet black. He grinned at me and looked Carol up and down. "Can't blame you," he said just under his breath. Well, now I had to play. You know how it is if you've ever been male. As if to reinforce this, the barker said, "Care to test that luck, son?" I was 20 years old. Calling me son was probably another of his foolproof snares. And I was already caught. "Okay, Pop, I'll give her a try." "Yes, yes," he called out, though we were standing right in front of him, and clapped his hands. "Win a prize for the lovely lady," he said, echoing every carnival barker I'd ever seen in old movies. I reached for my wallet and asked, "How much?" "Dime a dot," the barker told me, smooth as could be. A dime? This was 1992. You couldn't buy penny candy for a dime. Well, if he didn't know how to run a business, it was his loss. I put my wallet back in my pocket.
"What are the prizes?" Carol asked.
"Depends on what number he lands on," said the man. Then he snorted. "If he manages to pop a balloon." "For example?" I asked.
"For example, son, you pop a balloon with a number 4, and you win a lovely Pez dispenser."
He pointed to a rack of red and blue dispensers in the corner. They must have been products for early Halloween shoppers, because they were realistic and creepy instead of cartoonish, like severed heads on sticks.
"Lovely,"
Carol said with a smile. The rack above the dispensers held several dolls. Again, ugly, lifelike dolls with pale skin and unpleasant faces, like babies preserved by a bad taxidermist. "And the dolls?" I asked.
"The dolls are if you land on a 5, he said, then pointed. "Lamps are number 6.
Above the dolls was a rack of what appeared to be lava lamps, though they were all completely black. I thought they might be those sorts of lights that make everything glow. Still, they were unsightly, like they were filled with tar instead of, well, whatever you put in lava lamps. I didn't want any of these prizes. But I did want to impress my girlfriend. I fished a quarter out of my jeans. "I'll take 2, I said. He appraised the quarter like a jeweler and stuck it in a bag hanging below his big belly.
"You can have 3 dots for the quarter. How's that?"
How did this guy make any money? He let me pick 3 darts from the tray. They felt like regular darts, not weighed down or lopsided. My brother had a dartboard in his room growing up, and we used to play all the time. I was good at darts.
"How good are you, son?"
the barker asked, again, almost as if he were reading my mind. For some reason, the word son sounded like an insult to me. "The name's Chris," I told him.
"Pleased to meet you, Chris," the barker said. "Vernon Tobler's the name."
I expected to hear him say, "Barking's my game." But for once, he didn't complete the cliché.
"Just step up to the line and throw."
I did. The wall with the balloons was approximately 15 feet back, which wasn't too bad. It looked like the wall was slightly angled, so if you missed a balloon and the dart didn't stick, it would miss the other balloons as it fell. I squinted, aimed at a shiny yellow orb, and threw. The dart flew straight and true,
It popped the balloon and stuck right into a red number 5, which was riddled with holes. Carol whooped with delight. "Very nice, Chris," the barker said, and went to the rack with the dolls. I expected him to say, "Oh, I forgot, you have to get 3 balloons with the same number to claim a prize," as if it had truly slipped his mind. But he didn't. He asked, "Any one in particular you like?" "Don't look at me," I said, and deferred to Carol. She looked at the row and wrinkled her nose.
"They're all so ugly," she whispered.
"Which'll it be, cutie?" Tobler said. I liked cutie even less than I had son.
"Oh, the fat one on the end,"
she said, not very enthusiastically. The barker took it down and handed it to me, not to Carol. It was heavy and squat, like a nasty, stupid baby that could only cry and poop. Its face was molded in mid-squall, and I'd be lying if I said it didn't disturb me. It was the look an ugly, fat baby would have if you smacked it with a newspaper. And it was more than just that. There was something wrong about the doll, something hard to place, as if it had been designed to hurt the eye, like certain colors were supposed to.
"Isn't that a spitting image?"
the barker said, mock sweetly.
"Adorable," Carol said as I held it. "Remind me not to have kids with you."
I thrust the baby, doll, out to her.
"We'll adopt."
She reached for it, then stopped. She put her arms down and actually took a half step back. She looked more disturbed than I was, and I was holding it. "Hey," I said, "I want it for you."
"I don't want it,"
she breathed, unwilling to accept such a massive obligation.
"What's the matter, cutie?"
Tobler asked, grinning. He was enjoying himself.
"They say ugly babies make the handsomest grown-ups."
He tossed me a furtive look.
"I'll bet Chris here has some darling baby photos at home."
I glared at him and leaned to put the baby, the doll, on the booth's countertop. As I began to let it go, I felt a peculiar sensation, a prickling in my ears, and it seemed the doll's gaze met mine. Its eyes were too real, almost alive. Its bloated head slowly pivoted to the right, then the left. It was shaking its head. In that moment, I felt, not in my mind, but in some other part of me, an older part, that I should leave this booth, leave the baby, and take my girl, and leave the carnival, and go somewhere else. And do it now. I felt I was in danger. But not just me, Carol. Carol was somehow in more danger than I was. It was like, and I know this sounds crazy since I can't know what it's like, but it was like when a dog senses an earthquake coming. And I would have done it, too. But Tobler spoke again.
"You've still got 2 more dots, son."
I let go of the doll and glanced at it nervously. The head was just on loosely, that's all.
"Lots more balloons up there," he continued.
Did it matter? I'd proven my dart prowess. Did I need another morbid prize?
"Let's see if it was just beginner's luck,"
Tobler added. "All right," I said, and picked up another dart. I didn't really want to keep playing, but I did want the barker to shut up. I lobbed the dart, a little too hard, I guess. It missed a red balloon and stuck in the wall.
"Oh," Tobler said, immensely disappointed. "Guess that arm ain't so golden, eh?"
Golden arm? What century was this guy from? Just 2 booths away, you could win Red Hot Chili Peppers t-shirts, and Skid Row was blasting from cheap speakers. But this guy... I almost expected Tobler here to put on a jaunty bowler and repeat his favorite vaudeville routine.
Last dart, son, he said, chuckling. He looked at Carol again. What do you think, cutie? Can Chris go 2 out of 3?
This was annoying. Maybe if Carol and I went to the car now, we could go park somewhere. I picked up the last dart. I'd show him. I aimed at that red balloon, let the dart fly, and heard the gratifying pop as it hit its mark.
Real good, the barker said,
and I saw the number, a 2.
What's 2?
Carol asked. I looked on the prize shelves, but I didn't see any major prizes there, as most of the booths had on display.
Well,
Tobler said, his brow going up in pride,
numbers 1, 2, and 3 are sort of the opposite of winners.
What do you mean?
She asked. It means they're bum numbers, I guessed. Why even have numbers behind the losing balloons?
Not quite, the man said.
He stepped up to the counter.
Loser numbers, take a prize, he said, and scooped up the ugly doll.
He went to the shelf and plopped it back in its spot.
You take back a prize,
Carol said, hardly able to believe it.
What a chip!
I didn't care, really. I hated that doll. No big loss. Come on.
Them's the rules, honey, the barker said.
I wonder why you didn't say that up front, she said, still angry.
I took Carol's arm and we started to walk away.
Those prizes weren't worth a dime.
He laughed, a lecherous, dirty sound.
Bottle up that wine, cutie, and I'll be proud to drink.
Carol stopped, turned around, and marched back to the booth, leaving me where I stood. She reached in her pocket, and I thought she was going to mace him. Instead, she thrust a dime down on the countertop.
The name's Carol, Baldy.
He looked at the dime greedily. A dime? And scooped it into his bag.
Well, well, let's see your stuff. Carol?
She grabbed the nearest dart and aimed carefully. She let it fly, and I heard the pop from where I stood on the midway.
Get out of the way,
a voice right next to my ear said. I was shoved from behind. I turned, and a big hairy lowlife was standing there, his equally hairy girlfriend by his side. They wore matching Slayer concert t-shirts with the sleeves cut off. Unfiltered cigarettes hung in their mouths.
Sorry,
I said, and moved away from them. The girl, her black makeup crusted on her dog-like eyes, blew smoke at me as they walked by. The lowlife seemed to think this was original and hilarious. I turned back to the dart booth. Carol wasn't there anymore. I looked up the midway, then back down. I saw a woman who looked similar, but as soon as I stepped in her direction, I knew it wasn't her. I walked back to Tobler's booth. He was at the wall, pulling a dart from a red number 3.
Hey,
I said to him, and caught a grin on his face as he turned around. At least I thought I did.
Where's Carol?
He seemed to think about this, as if to say,
Carol? Who's Carol? I don't know any Carol.
Then he shrugged instead.
Which way did she go?
I asked, both annoyed and worried. He shrugged again.
Maybe she lost interest in you, son. It happens.
I didn't believe that for a second. Things were going great with us, and she wouldn't do that. Besides, I was her ride home.
Maybe she found a better ride, Vernon Tobler said with a wink.
And then I looked at the prize shelves. I don't know why I looked over there, but I was drawn to them. There was a new Pez dispenser on the bottom row. It was the same as the others, morbid, realistic, like a severed head on a red stalk. Except this head had Carol's haircut. I stepped all the way up to the booth. It had Carol's face.
Wanna try your luck, Chris?
Tobler asked, and I could see the sides of his mouth twitch, as if they extremely wanted to smile, and he wouldn't let them.
What happened to Carol?
Only a dime a dot, son, he said.
I looked back at the balloon wall and saw the newly revealed three.
What does three win?
Nothing, he said.
Clearly he was bored, and my question had been a stupid one.
Three's a give back.
Give back what? I knew the answer, but I wanted him to say it. He said nothing.
Can I see that Pez dispenser?
I asked, pointing.
Which Pez dispenser?
You know which one.
Chris,
Tobler said sourly.
I'm needing to close up soon. You gonna play or not?
I looked at him. This was a bad man. If he was a man at all. He chuckled again. The sounds of the carnival faded around me. I could hear the laughing, the shouting, the music, and then nothing. It was just the two of us.
You and I,
he said in a smooth pitchman voice. I pulled out my wallet and removed a dollar. I slapped it on the counter. What do I need to hit? I asked. He snatched up the dollar and bagged it.
Good question. Let's just say four's your lucky number tonight.
Four, I said, then realized it hardly mattered, since I couldn't see what numbers hid behind what balloons.
Try your luck,
Tobler said, and stepped back from the playing area. I picked up a dart. It felt heavy and awkward. I put it back and chose another one. It felt wrong, too. I thought it might just be me. I eyed a bright blue balloon and threw at it, missing it completely. My dart didn't even stick in the wall. It fell lifelessly onto the ground.
Nine more darts, son,
Tobler announced. I picked up another dart. My hand was shaking. I tried to will it to be still, and it steadied a bit, but not entirely. I aimed for that same blue balloon and threw the dart. It missed the blue one, but glanced off the green balloon below as it fell. The green balloon popped, and my dart hit the ground. I thought he would disqualify that one because the dart didn't stick. It seemed there were lots of new rules to this game.
A winner!
Tobler shouted, and I breathed a sigh. There was a faded red six behind the green balloon. The barker went to the prize shelves and reached up to the third row.
Any lamp in particular?
He asked. Before I could answer, he brought down one of the black lava lamps and placed it in front of me. It looked like it had been burned but not melted, as the black water swished around inside. I thought I could hear someone screaming.
Wait, I said. Can I trade this for...
I wanted to say Carol, but didn't.
For a Pez dispenser?
Tobler looked levelly at me.
Didn't hit a four, did you, Chris?
No, I supposed I hadn't. I picked up another dart, careful not to brush against the lava lamp. I was even more afraid. What if I hit a two or a three? Would I be able to give back the lamp, or would he want something else? What would happen if I didn't land on a four at all? What if I kept missing until he closed? What if another player won and picked the dispenser with Carol's face on it? What if I ran out of money? What if I kept hitting give-back numbers?
Getting late, Chris, Tobler reminded me.
It was best not to think about things, just to move. I threw another dart. And again I missed, glancing off a white balloon, but not popping it.
7 more darts, son, the barker said, and grinned on.
I looked behind me, feeling eyes back there. But I was alone. Nobody else was around, and nobody cared how I did. I could throw the dart at him, I thought. Maybe get it in his eye. If I killed him with his darts, I could grab Carol and go. We could run, and maybe not.
The barker cleared his throat rudely. My cue. I picked up another dart. I could hear my own breathing. It was like an old man's. A voice in my head seemed to say, "This is it. This dart." I didn't want to throw it. What was Carol thinking right now? Her head atop a candy holder. Could she think? Could she see me? Something told me she could, and that the other prizes on the shelf could think and feel too. And scream, I thought, as I glanced at the dark lamp in front of me. I didn't want to spend eternity as a carnival prize. Of course, they hadn't either. There were 5 or 6 lamps, about 8 dolls, and about 10 pezzes. This next throw would change one of those numbers. It looked like Tobler knew it, too. "Tomorrow will be too late," he said, shaking his head sadly.
"What?"
"It's now or never. Your love won't wait." It sounded like a poem or a song, but I couldn't place it. Why had I gotten myself into this? We should have gone on the zipper again, then headed back to the car. But I could sit and think about it all night. I raised the dart and looked around the wall for a balloon that called to me. An orange one seemed to be brighter than the others. It would be my target. I was about to throw, and Tobler said,
"You've shot 3 and 3, son. Let's break that tie."
I looked back at the wall, and now I felt that I shouldn't go for that orange balloon. I felt I had narrowly escaped disaster. There was a black balloon to its right. It was the only black balloon on the wall. There were lots of orange ones, but only the one black one. Orange or black, black or orange. I went for the black one. I threw the dart and missed it. Or rather, I grazed it. It made a wheezing sound and shriveled quickly down to reveal the number beneath it. 4.
"A winner," admitted Tobler, his grin gone. 6 more darts," he said.
Then he walked over to the prize shelf. He picked one up at random. I said,
"Wait, the one on the end."
"Which?"
he asked stupidly, like he didn't know.
"Carol,"
I said, and voicing it was like admitting defeat.
"Carol," he repeated,
and in his mouth it was like proclaiming victory. He picked up Carol's dispenser and brought it over to the counter.
"Chris,"
a female voice said behind me. I turned.
Carol was standing there, looking at me. Beside her, an old guy was trying to eat a corn dog with no upper teeth. A crying child was begging to be picked up by her father. Ugly kid Joe was playing from a nearby booth.
"I went to the car to find you,"
she said, looking confused.
"Where have you been?"
Right here.
I wanted to touch her to see if she was real.
"Carol, I thought you..."
"Come on,"
Carol said, taking my arm.
"Let's go."
She gave me a tug. She was real. I turned back to Tobler, furious that he had misled me so. He played on my fears, my gullibility. He knew I had thought the dispense... How could he have known? Really? Everything he had said, it was all his practiced shyster act, and I had bought into it, bobber, line, and tackle.
To my credit, I had never had much of an overactive imagination before, so this guy had to be good. Tobler started to grin again, which was odd, since he had lost. I didn't want the lava lamp or the Pez dispenser anyway. I looked down at his hand. It held nothing. There was still an empty space on the Pez dispenser shelf. Where?
Chris,
Carol said, and I turned. She didn't look confused or angry. She looked scared.
Let's get out of here,
she pleaded. It hadn't been my imagination, had it? So we got out of there. I left the lava lamp where it sat, unwilling to touch it. Who knew what diseases it might have communicated? Not to mention the screaming. We made it to the car, and I drove Carol home. She didn't feel so hot, and frankly, neither did I. I asked my roommates who had been to the carnival the day before, but none of them had played the dart game. They hadn't even seen it. That night, alone in my bed, I found it hard to go to sleep. What had happened tonight? Was I crazy? Should I tell Carol? What would she say? Who was Vernon Tobler, and what had his booth really been about? It didn't matter, I supposed. I had tried my luck, and won. I was grateful I had played darts as a kid with my brother Ray. And what was I out? A little over a buck? It was hard to convince myself, though, as the minutes lying in darkness ticked by. I kept thinking about the last thing Tobler had said to me before Carol had shown up. I hoped he didn't mean anything by it. I still had 6 throws left. The end.
Okay, we are back. What are we going to have the kids say? No, we don't do that anymore. And I feel like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When the kids bitch about the story, it makes it okay for you to say, yeah, I hated that story too. Rish, you should stop podcasting and stop writing and stop breathing altogether. This story, I was nervous about it. It was the very first one that I wrote. Like I said, this was back in the year 2000. And it's weird because, well, especially the second one, especially Round and Round, which is way more autobiographical than the other two. These are meant to be nostalgic glimpses into 1992 and into the last time that I went to the real carnival with my friend and a would-be girlfriend, and it was a good time. It really was. It was magical. Being young was magical, and I was unhappy a lot of times when I was a kid, thinking, well, one day my prince will come. One day I'll find my love, and I wish that I could go back and say, no, you're never going to be happier than you are right now. Oh, don't kill yourself. No, I didn't mean it that way. Oh, shoot. Kid, I didn't mean you would never be happy. Well, yeah, maybe you had the right idea. It wasn't that long. Oh, so I wrote it in 2000, right? In 2000, which was only 8 years after the story took place. And I guess 8 years is a big deal back then. You know, when you're a kid, 8 years is your whole life. And when you're a teenager, 8 years is half of your life. And when you're in your 20s, 8 years is, you know, half of the life that you remember. Just that time period, 91, 92, was the, what would you do if I sang out of tune? Wonder years of my youth. When everything was new, all of these experiences that I was having, I had never had before, and I didn't know what was coming next, and it was exciting. I like this ship. It's exciting. And like I said, I was worried about this story because I remember when I wrote it, being really worried about the Pez dispenser and the lava lamps. Not so much the like the dead baby dolls or whatever, because those are always going to be creepy, no matter what. But nobody's ever going to be afraid of a Pez dispenser or a lava lamp. And so I was just like, oh, people are going to make fun of this story. But here's the thing. I recorded the story this week, just, you know, so I'd have all three. Not intending to do a third episode for this, the weakest of the three stories. And I was surprised. This was the strongest of the three stories 20 years later. It's the most, like, simple, universally entertaining. It's not overwritten. It does what it sets out to do. And I don't have a problem with the Pez dispensers, or especially the lava lamps. Lava lamps have always been kind of odd and scary to me. Well, they've been supernatural in a way. Vernon Tobler is the name of, like, the carnival barker. And I don't know how I did his voice when I originally recorded this story. It was in 2004. Maybe it was 2005, because I looked and it said the last time that the file had been altered was 2005. But I feel like it was before then. I recorded both of them that I had written, which were just called Carnival 1 and Carnival 2 when I first wrote them. I recorded them and I put them on a CD and I listened to it while I was on a road trip. And there were a couple of things that I really, really liked and a couple of things that I didn't. I made a few changes to Try Your Luck, but I made a lot more changes to Round and Round. And then, even though I had never recorded Father's Day in August, I made even more changes to that than I had to the first two, because it was just too long and too detailed and too sprawling. It still is, but it is what it is. I'm not going to go back and mess with it now. It's done. And now that it's out on the Rish Outcast, it's doubly done, right? I like Try Your Luck. I don't know. Just the idea of, like, a malevolent carnival barker, and he quotes Elvis to him a couple of times. I like that. I feel like the main character is a little bit more of an everyman. He's less specific than the main character in Round and Round, who is me, hopelessly geeky. I mean, even, is it Jimmy in Round and Round is not as much of a loser as I almost said am, but I'll say was, just to save me that little bit of dignity. And then the dad in Father's Day in August, he's not really me at all, although, you know, he does worry about his mom, and he worries about his kid. I feel like he's a good guy, but he's made some mistakes. But I hope that you can see how they're sort of companion pieces, the three stories. The two with a guy and his girlfriend are both easier to say, okay, yeah, those are companion pieces. But the one with the guy and his son, that works too, as, you know, just what it is. Technically, I could write another, I could write a bunch more, but I could write another one with, like, a different couple. You could write one where the main character is female and it's her best friend who's getting engaged, or the main character is female and it's not her best friend, it's her girlfriend, or a main character who's female and her boyfriend, and maybe she's about to break up with him, or she can tell that the writing's on the wall, that this relationship's not going to go much further. I don't know. I don't have any ideas for a fourth one, except for I feel like a fourth one would be a lot more like Father's Day in August, which is to say long. This one, Try Your Luck, I think was only 3,000 words, and it's so hard for me to write a story that's that length anymore. I feel like I pulled it off in this one. I don't feel like it's not overwritten or underwritten, and I don't go on and on about description, and I don't put a lot of references to songs, although, you know, I think that there was some stuff there that's supposed to set it in 1992. I don't know. The main character, you know, he doesn't really have anything to prove. Carol seems like a really good girlfriend, and she's not saying, oh, can you win me one of these prizes, or oh, let's see how strong you are, or any of that stuff that you sometimes see in movies. She doesn't rise to the bait. Well, I guess she does. She's the one that loses her soul or whatever in the dart match, isn't she? I don't know. I don't have an answer. Like I said, these were meant to be short episodes, and this will probably be the shortest of the three. I never published this. I haven't shared it with a lot of people. I wonder, you know, if I had put it out there in 2000. Was there self-publishing in 2000? Probably not. But you could share your stories on, like, bulletin boards and forums and stuff. Huh. I wrote a ton of stories in this period when I wrote this story. And most of them were looking back at high school or being a kid. And I thought it would be fun to set them all in either the same town or in towns that could be nearby each other. And that way it would just be fun to have one story reference another story and maybe have characters from one show up in another. I did do that, and I was really impressed with myself with being able to write a few stories. I almost said several, but back in those days, it was a real accomplishment if I wrote a story in a month or in 2 months. Maybe it was just, you know, I was out of practice. I'd only been doing it for 10 years at the time. Maybe I'll find more of these stories and share them with you. I already have. But yeah, just it was fun. I think that around this time is when I was doing extra work. I would always take a notebook with me. I could jot down story ideas or write stories while I was sitting there waiting to be used. They say the big thing in the film industry is hurry up and wait. And it's true. It's true, LeFou, and I've got my sights set on that one. What, the inventor's daughter? She's the one. The lucky girl I'm going to marry. But she's the most beautiful girl in town. And that makes her the best. And don't I deserve the best? Well, of course you do, but I... Right from the moment when I met her, saw her, I said she's gorgeous and I fell. Here in town there's only she who is beautiful as me. So I'm making plans to woo and marry Belle. Look, there he goes. Isn't he dreamy? Monsieur Gaston. Oh, he's so cute. Sorry, guys. I ought to cut that out, but I'm not going to. Thank you for listening to the Rish Outcast. Please let me know if you want more of these stories. Please let me know if you want me to stop. Please let me know if you think that he's such a tall, dark, strong, and handsome brute. I've been Rish Outfield. Good night.
Gather round. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. This burlap sack filled with squirming madness was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That sounds crazy too, I realize. But it means that you may download and copy the files free of charge, but they do not belong to you. Hence, you cannot charge for them or alter them for your own perfidious purposes.
What's perfidious mean, Fake Sean?
It means faithless, treacherous, deceitful.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Which you only know because you looked it up.
Well, not so impressed anymore.
But what is impressive, boy, was the music in this episode, which was by Kevin MacLeod, from the website incompetech.com, also under a Creative Commons license. And I suggest you consider going to www.patreon.com/RishOutfield to support the show if you would like to encourage more of this madness. Good night.
Batafuco. Mom had said that there would always be people like that, and that Tanisa should learn early not to bend over backwards, and that Tanisa should learn early on
and that Tanisa should learn early on not to bend over backwards to pee.
God damn it!
And that Tanisa should learn early on not to bend over backwards to please people like that. Brecken rudely corrected.
We're gonna play in my room.
They went floor to floor, looking at what there was to look at, and Brecken showed Tanisa around the apartment complex.